How's it going, Brendan?
It's great, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is going for episode 199. We're unofficially 200 already, or gonna be? I don't know. If this is like the weird in between zone where it doesn't matter because 200 is next week's, but if you count those other episodes, 200 was last week. So what? I mean, this week is just like, I don't know what, but I hope you're listening anyway and enjoy the show as we go.
It's like that period between Thanksgiving and Christmas. That's what this podcast is.
Yes, yes.
Like, it's good, but it's not anything to celebrate.
Yeah, we're doing the 200th episode next week. We've already mapped out not really. It's I mean, we know it's happening, we just don't know a lot of the parameters yet, or we're not going to spoil them by, you know.
I think we know what day it's gonna be.
Yeah. the rest of the features and specifications of the 200th podcast episode will be determined shortly. Probably shortly before we hit record.
Or is it all predetermined? I don't know, man.
Well, in this reality anyway, we'll just see how it goes. What we definitely won't be doing for the 200th episode is wearing specific clothing. Which isn't to say that we're going to be naked or anything like that. Not that you could tell. I mean, audio podcast, that's the glory of having an audio podcast.
This is why we don't have a visual show. They're, for both us and the audience, entirely pants optional.
It's a two-way street here is what we're trying to say.
It's a two-way street that no one can see down.
Well, we got news this week of a overly specific or clothing that's marketed in a very overly specific way. It's what appears to be just kind of a casual women's top, kind of, I don't know, like blousey, flowy blousey, not, you know, not tight or form fitting. But the descriptor for the top is podcast co-host top, and this was in my Twitter feed earlier today, and I looked at it and thought at first, oh my god, that's hilarious, I need one, and then second, no, that's stupid. The novelty lasted maybe 4 seconds, maybe. I don't know.
It lasted for me as long as it took to figure out what the hell it was. And as soon as I realized what it was, I immediately hated it.
And I thought maybe this was just a thing that that someone had made, and you know, they're slapping the words, you know, podcast co-host on it as a way to kind of, you know, differentiate it marketing wise or something. But they went a lot further. I mean, they definitely did that. I'm sure the makers of this top, you know, did not consult any podcast co-hosts in the creation of it. They certainly didn't talk to us, hashtag Moontent, but the copy for it talks about how, you know, having something comfortable to wear, you know, for another day in the studio. It's beyond ridiculous and 100% not a thing.
I will read you the description for this dumb shirt. Even a late night in the studio deserves your best style effort. Show you agree by sporting this navy top to record your next episode. Boasting a notched neckline, tab sleeves, and a deeper blue trim down the center, this sharp mod cloth namesake label top makes you, your outfit just as clever as the insights you share with your digital audience.
Oh, God.
Go fuck yourself.
Wow, the level of cringe that it's like, I'm concerned I'm not going to be able to release most of my, you know, muscles.
Well, and there are two reviews on their website.
Oh, really?
So there's only two reviews, It's got an overall rating of 3 out of 5 stars because one review is a 1-star review that says it was, in a word, enormous. The fabric is a little see-through, but the color and quality are great. It also has absolutely no shape, just a giant box of fabric. The other person loved it. They gave it 5 stars. Fit is perfect. Material is fine, but feels a little synthetic.
Wow. Yeah.
2 reviews. You get 1 star, you get 5 star.
Well, the average is 3, so is that good? I don't think so. I think I would say it needs more reviews, but I don't think anyone should actually buy this. So
no. It looks like some sort of robe for some sort of judge in a society in a post-apocalyptic world. Like, this is the council members wear this shirt.
Right. Right. Just before they pronounce, like, you know, the death sentence by, you know, holding the globe.
Yeah, you have been exiled. Sent to the penal colony of Rurapent.
Yeah. That's
a joke that probably no one is going to get who's listening, but I don't care because it makes me laugh. Yeah, Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Watch it.
Well, speaking of judgments, this week we heard, somewhat unfortunately, California was on its way to abolishing daylight saving time. They had passed it in the California State Assembly, and this week the Senate, the California Senate, defeated it. It was something like it seemed pretty close. It wasn't like a matter of, you know, 1 or 2 votes. It was something like 10 votes. Oddly enough, it seemed sort of bipartisan, like there wasn't a specific party line delineation between for or against. So in that way, I guess, yay. There's not gridlock at every stage of government. But at the same time, the arguments for keeping daylight savings time were really ridiculous. I think one of them was, I just like it.
Yeah. State Senator Anthony Cannella, a Republican, said, I like daylight saving. I just like it.
And then the other great one was saying that it was on behalf of farmers, which is what the original, you know, the origin of daylight savings time was, in order to help farmers have more time for the harvest, in theory. So by you know, having, you know, more daylight during the summer months that are within, you know, 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. or whatever, it meant that more people would be working, you know, productivity wise in farms. And so that argument was kind of trotted out again in defense of daylight savings. And I think one of the state senators had said something like, the our crops have become accustomed to the change, and they've been bred specifically that way. So let's not break the their understanding of time, which I don't even know where to start on how ridiculous that is. I mean, first of all, the crops don't know what time of day it is. It could be, you know, whenever. They might know seasons.
You don't know their lives, Alan. You don't know. You don't speak for the plants.
And then second, the thought that we can, you know, breed crops to recognize an hour time differential,
that's just good science.
Bully for our scientists, but I'm pretty sure that doesn't actually work. But unfortunately, it looks like daylight savings is going to stick around for a little while longer in California, and we'll see if it comes up again. It probably will. I feel like this is not the first time that it's come through the legislature, but it may. I don't think it absolutely closes the door on turning it off, which I think should be a thing. I think, you know, time is just a, you know, human construct anyway. So
time is a flat circle, Alan.
Well, it's a flat circle that doesn't have to change, you know, in the middle of October and screw up everyone's sleep schedule. Speaking of screwing up everyone's sleep schedule, this Monday, I was awakened to news about SETI investigating a signal that was found in Russia. In Russia, there's some large, you know, satellite array or something of that nature, and it detected a signal. And that's what SETI is supposed to look for and check out. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. So it's the project that goes and checks out signals from space and either figures out where they came from or looks specifically to find deliberately made signals from outer space, not necessarily just signals in general, because there are signals from all sorts of things like pulsars and, you know, weird reflections off of planets and things like that. So SETI's charged with looking into those. And so this Russian facility supposedly found something in, I want to say it was May of 2015. So I'm not sure why they took so long to disclose it, but they did this Monday. And then SETI released a preliminary statement yesterday saying that they should be skeptical of it because, I mean, one of the major reasons it was exciting was that it was such a very strong signal, and it was in a pretty high bandwidth range. And so people were excited that it was A, deliberate, and B, because it was so strong, that it was from a civilization that had the amount of power or understanding of how, you know, energy in the universe works in order to send such a big signal from so far away. It ended up, the thought was that it came from multiple light years away. I mean, way beyond last week's episode about Proxima B. This was many, many light years further than that. Turns out, this morning, it was confirmed or at least preliminarily explained away by a different Russian space agency that said that it was probably so strong because it was terrestrial interference or a satellite which the receiver station was not supposed to have known about, aka a spy satellite or something like that. So, unfortunately, it looks like the signal that SETI is going to investigate is not a thing, and they're still going to follow up on it and do. I know they've pointed like an array of space telescopes in that direction to look for the radio frequencies that were supposedly found. I still think that's a thing. Go SETI, go for finding stuff out in space. I actually just saw a billboard for SETI on Bascom down here, down by the San Jose City College. I don't know who's funding that billboard or what we get out of it, but yes, SETI, it's a thing. Let's keep looking for intelligence in space. We should also look for signs of intelligence down here too, because that's unfortunately in somewhat short supply. Case in point, at Facebook, a little while ago, Facebook made some headlines and some waves because there was a, not exactly a scandal, but somewhat of a scandal because it involved Facebook's news feed and specifically the What's Trending box and how that was generated, the stories that come out of that. As more and more people rely on Facebook for news, which I highly disrecommend, that really should not be a thing. But as people do that, they tend to look at the What's Trending box because it does seem to float there. I don't know if it's sticky in that, like, if you scroll down, does it stay there like an ad does? But it is kind of a feature of Facebook that they're trying to push. And it got Facebook in hot water for a little bit because they confirmed, or some people confirmed, that the people that were behind that box had a liberal bias. And it's like, amazing.
Yeah, you know what else they found? Facts have a liberal bias.
So in response, I guess Facebook apparently fired that entire editorial staff, which is not a thing, surprise, but they replaced it with a completely algorithmic method, which is kind of what people expected that what's trending box to have been anyway, which is why they were so up in arms about if it had a liberal bias or not. Turns out, if you have a completely algorithmic system picking news, it puts up fake news. And that's what happened this week. It had put up at least one story that really anyone with like half a brain probably could have figured out was not a real news story. They were talking about how it potentially could have been like misread by someone putting breaking on the front of the the post or something like that, which I still, you know, find amazing when I see on Twitter, you know, breaking. I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means anymore. It's the internet. Like, news happens. That's a real thing. But fake news apparently gets promoted by the trending box. So it's looking like they're gonna have to revamp what they put into that box. That either revamp the algorithm or unfire all of those people. Something to that effect. But really, the takeaway is don't rely on Facebook for your news, please. it's not a thing. We had talked about this in the past about how even an algorithmically generated news feed, if it were from, you know, based on your interests or things you want to learn, that's not how news works. News should not be related to your interests. It should be what's actually happening in the world. So hopefully they will figure that out or do away with it altogether, and people will have to actually go out and search for news sources and hopefully, you know, promote and use actual news sources.
Don't give everything over to the robots.
A company not giving everything over to the robots is, I believe it's EA, Electronic Arts, which produces the Madden series of games. So Madden 17, I think they dropped the 20, so it's just 17. I guess we're all right with a two-digit year again, but that's fine. It took 17 years to get back to it. But Madden 17 is coming out this either this month or it's probably this month or next month. And as they've done in the past, they are having updates for stats and you know, trades and things. So your gameplay field when you're playing can reflect the actual NFL if you want it to. Or I'm not sure if you have the option or if it just automatically does it. But one feature that they're adding this week, which we found out about, is the commentary, which is kind of algorithmically generated in that it picks specific things to be said about players. You know, there's some color commentary that's in the game. It's not just specifically play-by-play. And they're expanding that and creating commentary update DLC, or which may or may not be free. I'm not sure, but it looks like they just have update packs you can download for commentary tracks that will insert color commentary about like who's playing, you know, what's happening this week, or in a effort to kind of make the fake game world kind of step in time with the real game world and the players. This came up because of Colin Kaepernick said something or did something somewhat questionable. It's his right to do that. I think the commentary around it, I'm sure, is everywhere else. We're not going to talk about it because it's pretty much not a thing. But the fact that the commentary will be added to the game, at least in some way, I think is really interesting. That's a interesting way to make the keep the game relevant, at least in the year that it's happening. I'm not sure if, you know, I'm not sure of the replay value of those games past the year that they have on them is anymore.
Well, I've still got last year's Madden, so I'll probably be sticking with that. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it must be odd for that franchise to have such a tight release cycle. I mean, you essentially have to turn out a new game every year, and I don't know of what they can really improve upon every year to make that interesting. The update of the commentary tracks, I think, is pretty interesting. And at the same time, I'm not sure I want like stat updates and things to change. I kind of like the frozen in time aspect of some of those games. Like I remember playing the original Nintendo Tecmo Bowl like a little while ago via an emulator, and just thinking how hilarious it was playing as like the what was that, like early or late 1980s like 49ers. Pretty fun. I mean, you can't tell who anyone is. They're all just kind of, 8-bit little blobs on the screen, but it's like, oh my gosh, that's Jerry Rice. Not really. I don't know how that actually translates to Jerry Rice, but it works. So I do like that that point in time aspect of it. I think they probably make a fair amount of money every year because it does come out every year, rather than moving to like a yearless model where it just updates every year. I could see that becoming a subscription-based game, though. There are people that would probably buy it as a subscription. I don't know. NFL games as a service. I'm sure someone is thinking very hard about that one. Moving over to a topic that... maybe people are thinking hard about. I'm not sure, but I thought it was interesting. It's beating air gaps in computers. Air gap computing is a method of keeping computers completely isolated from each other. I like to think of this as the Battlestar Galactica method of of computer security. Those of you that aren't familiar with this, you should probably at least watch, the pilot of the new Battlestar Galactica series. I'm not going to say watch the whole series.
The first couple seasons are good.
Right. I think there's some really good stuff in the series as a whole, but it's unfortunately too uneven for me to say watch the whole series. But
I'd say 2.5 seasons.
Yeah,
it's good, and then it's questionable.
But one of the things that was novel in the that they brought out in the first couple episodes was that the reason the Battlestar Galactica was not infested by the Cylons and the viruses that were involved is that they still used like essentially hardwired network technology and did not use the wireless to talk to everything. And so I think that's hilarious. And it meant that computers were isolated from each other, and that was a way to keep hackers out or keep information from leaking or things like that. Since then, there have been a lot of talk about setting computers up in that way, and they're called air-gapped computers. So they are computers that once you set them up, you don't let them touch the internet, you don't let any connections go to them, anything that comes in and out of it is highly monitored and approved and stuff like that, which I think is, it seems like the best way to completely secure a computer from any kind of attack. Turns out there's at least two methods that people have figured out about how to get data off of them. So one of them I thought it was hilarious. It uses, assuming the computer has a hard drive in it, which... like a physical hard drive with spinning platters, is that if you can hack that computer, or you can potentially insert malware to the computer that would make the hard drives spin in a rhythm that could then be picked up by a microphone, in which case then you could transmit data off of the computer by using just sound of the hard drive spinning, which I think is... kind of cool, but also probably really impractical just based on the data rate. I mean, how fast or how slow could you make those sounds that would be discernible to send data? Turns out someone thought of an even easier idea, which is that if the computer has a USB keyboard or USB mouse attached to it, which probably most computers do, you can essentially turn the cable of that USB into an antenna, and then you can send data however fast you want, because it's radio waves at that point. They're calling this technology USB, and B, or spelled B-E-E, like the, because it's making a buzz noise. You're buzzing the data that you want to send out of that computer. So I guess computers are not 100% invulnerable if they're air-gapped. I frankly have no need to have an air gap. I actually like when computers are networked in my house, which means, you know, when the Cylons come, my house is toast. But that's a price I will have to pay probably later.
It's happened before. It will happen again.
Exactly.
So say we all.
And then moving. It's kind of staying in the future. Hopefully, Cylons are not involved in this project, but there's some news about nanobots and their usage, specifically mind controlling nanobots for drug release in humans eventually, hopefully. But what scientists are trying to do is make a mind-controllable gate that you can put on a structure that you make at the cellular level that surrounds like a medical chemical of some sort that if you want to release it into the bloodstream, you want to release it when the body needs it. And so what their idea was that their specific use case was that if your mind starts acting in a erratic way that would require medicine, you could have sensors that are attached to you that would figure out, oh, you're having, you know, an attack, or you're having there's something going on with your mind that you may not even be conscious of, but if your brainwave signals match that pattern, it would be able to signal they're calling them nanobots, but they're really just essentially cases for this medicine that are distributed throughout the body, and then on a specific signal, the cases would open up, and then that medicine would be delivered to the patient, and all of this would happen potentially without the person consciously triggering them. Although the way that it's described in the article has a couple of use cases for consciously triggering it as well. I think this sounds really interesting. It does have an aspect of it which I think is that instead of being kind of a mind control drug, these are drugs that are mind controlled. But you could use those drugs for mind control, which I think is just makes my head hurt thinking about that. The other use case, which I thought was interesting, was that if you could potentially change your sensitivity, their example, and I thought this was hilarious because it's not the first thing that came to mind, but it was in the chain of things to come to mind, which was that you could potentially turn up your body's sensitivity to alcohol so you could have like a really good time partying, and then turn that sensitivity back down so you could sober up so you could drive. I don't think this is exactly what they mean, because the difference for, I mean, that's a conscious thought, and that's something you could just turn on and off. Why not just, you know, inject that, right? I mean, or drink it or whatever, right? Like, I don't think you need a mind control system for that. I think the use of it you know, the unconscious use of it is more interesting, and then at the same time more dangerous, because you know, I could see, you could very easily see that being a like kind of as a suppressive kind of thing. You could have a drug that is released into your body whenever you start becoming like excited. I will, you know, it'll release a drug that'll, you know, dampen you down. It that looks like not mind control, but like just control.
Dosage control.
Yeah. So that one is probably not a thing, but interesting. It's a good attempt at nanotechnology. I think that is still something that is really interesting and less less ridiculous than it initially sounds. I mean, I think my first brush with nanotechnology at that level was the book Prey by Michael Crichton, which went way too far. I mean, in nanobots, like building things and stuff like that, you know, it's I think
that's like that movie with Johnny Depp. You know, that one that was not that great.
I unfortunately am not sure which one you mean.
Transcendence.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. I'm sure that was not good at all. I mean, it does show that the science is at least moving in that direction, but I think they have to work out their use cases a little bit more.
I'm gonna need to see some more spreadsheets.
Or I need my nanobots to release more, you know, acceptance drugs into my system. Well, we're reaching the end of the episode. I hope that we've kind of coerced your nanobots to at least be happy about the episode. Hopefully not too happy that it's ending, but happy for next week, especially the 200th episode of the Not a Thing podcast is coming soon. If you would like to participate at all in that episode or any episode in the future, we'd love to have you on. Give us a buzz on the Not a Thing podcast not air gapped computer at the HAL 900 at notathingpodcast.com, or tweet at us or Facebook us. Hopefully the Facebook algorithm will not suppress your posts to us.
That must be what happened to all the posts.
Oh, it's in top stories. I want to switch to most recent. Damn you. In any case, we're marching on strong. We'll keep making episodes as long as people keep listening to them. So thank you for listening. And Brennan, I'll talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.